Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld of Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, for the next, we have an Oscar preview show with Ruben Rosario, our movie expert. Ruben, hello.
Hello, Nate. It's such a pleasure to be back here.
I know. I love it. We had a huge following last year. We had like 5,000 people eventually download the show before and during the Oscars. So.
And I have to say, Nate, I have the fun memories of the chocolate pie we ate right after the last year's show ended.
I know. I made the chocolate pie from the help for dinner last year. This year I didn't have time to cook dinner, so we didn't. But there are no good shows this year to cook dinner. I mean, Lincoln, you really couldn't cook a show.
No.
What was a good, we didn't even have a foodie show. Les Miserables, I could have made bread.
Oh, goodness.
I could have made a loaf of bread. I'm so sorry. Okay, well, Grover, my partner, is a psychiatrist. He could have bought drugs from Silver Linings Playbook.
That's right.
That would have been cool. All right. Enough. Okay, we got to stop. So, the Oscars this year is the most exciting year. They're expecting this year that viewership to be one of the highest in history. There's been a lot of buzz. There's some fabulous movies, a lot of GLBT references, and let's see. Ruben, what do you want to talk about first?
Well, I just want to ask a question that I want to ask,
okay.
You know, which is like a million-dollar question. Is there anyone out there who's listening right now who thinks Argo is the best movie of 2012? Raise your hand. I want to hear from you.
Okay. Call 805-830-8355. Don't get John.
Because I did not dislike Argo. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think it's the best film of 2012.
Okay. 805-830-8355. If you're out there, give us a buzz. I'll put you on right away. I didn't think it was the best either. I think it was good. It was well made. It was clever.
Very tight.
Yeah. It was a very clever movie. If it does win, I can see why. We talked about this a little earlier before you got here. I think it's gotten the buzz because outside of the United States, which, of course, the Golden Globes was first and started the buzz that when it won Best Picture for Golden Globes, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, I think, liked it because it had something to do with the world history, world economy, you know, world military politics. So I think that...
And the way that Hollywood comes to the rescue.
Yeah, and Hollywood came to rescue, and they're the Hollywood Foreign Press. So they live in Hollywood, most of them, don't they?
They do. They cover entertainment and showbiz news for their own countries.
Right. Yeah. So they're Hollywood people, so they're not like the smartest tools in the shed.
Probably not. But they sure put in a good dinner where everyone gets drunk.
I know. I thought, I had a great time. Okay, let me ask you a question. Monday morning, what do you suspect people are going to be talking about the Oscars?
I think I got a feeling it's going to have to do a lot with Seth MacFarlane, the host of the Oscars. I think he really doesn't care about
right.
what people are going to think when he actually starts going on PC on us. I think there's going to be a lot of jokes that they're going to be talked about.
Right.
It's going to be a water cooler conversation, no doubt.
Right. Well, you know, they do have a 7-second delay.
They do.
I heard.
So a lot of blanks. It's going to be a lot of bleeps and blanks.
Right. I heard. And that started, you know, when that really started, I think, when was the, I can't remember which it was. But
it's been a while.
It's been a while. But yeah. there were a couple events where they had not the streaker with David Niven.
No.
But way after that.
I do recall when the actress who won supporting actress for The Fighter, she actually...
used the F word.
Yeah,
F-bomb.
She did.
Yeah, yeah,
an F-bomb.
Right.
They were able to catch that. They caught that.
Right. But I think there is one. Okay. So let me go on to some of the other things. GLBT. Okay. We have, of course, my friend and amazing man, Peter Staley, was in How to Survive a Plague, which is up for Best Documentary.
It's not favored to win, but
no.
I wouldn't be within the – it would be within the realm of possibility if it could upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I really don't think it will because I think you've got – we've got The Invisible War.
Which is terrific. That's my favorite.
Yeah, and that's –
it's sensational. It's not going to win either. I think
really?
Searching for Sugar Man is the odds-on favorite.
Why you say that?
It's a Cinderella story, and the Academy loves – Cinderella stories, the story
uh-huh.
of Rodriguez, the folk singer,
right.
who had two albums that flopped,
right.
and unbeknownst to him for many years, they were hits in South Africa.
Oh, right.
So it's that story of how they were able to discover that, yes, Rodriguez did not die in a fire, he did not kill himself, He was very much alive and well, still in Detroit, working construction. And he was able to do a concert in South Africa. It's just, you know, it's irresistible as far as go. And it's a very well-made film. I mean, no complaints here if it wins.
So what do you think it's going to win?
For documentary?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's Searching for Sugar.
Oh, so
it's yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
Okay, because you thought The Invisible War was good but not going to win.
Terrific.
Okay,
yeah.
And then what you know, I mean, How to Survive a Plague has gotten incredible press in the straight and gay press, mainly because most AIDS movies have been really downers. And this one was made like a documentary, but really had you hanging until the end about who was alive and who wasn't alive.
Absolutely. And I think the strength of the film is that it does not rely on the talking head format. It's like a crutch. It could be a crutch for a lot of documentary filmmakers.
Right.
And he saves all the vital talking head moments to the very end.
Correct.
And it's very empowering. It's a very, it's a satisfying film.
Right. I felt it was good. And that's what we're talking about, of course, because, you know, if it does win, it would be a huge, huge surprise. But it, as far as it's being used as a tool, How to Survive a Plague is now like a big hit, being shown in little community centers and even being shown in older adult centers because of the AIDS crisis in the older adult community.
I think it also crosses over. It transcends the AIDS movie, ghettoizing. I think it'll also be seen as a film about activism.
Okay.
You know, the Occupy Wall Street people who are actually have a cause that's not necessarily LGBT rights. Could actually see this film, and it's fascinating because it really documents how activism works, how activism can actually change lives, and you know,
right, your perspectives. And I actually knew Spencer Cox, who was in the film and was alive at the end of the film, but committed suicide shortly after the film on a completely unrelated basis. But
long as we're in the subject of LGBT, I think a lot of people don't realize that one of the most progressive in terms of LGBT content. This will be subtext bordering on text. Would be what Tony Kushner did in Lincoln.
Yes.
Which could very much be read as an LGBT parallel. The parallels are definitely there.
How so? Tell me.
Well, there's a very telling line where Daniel Day-Lewis plays, you know, brilliantly. Lincoln says, "We begin with equality."
Yes.
And that line is definitely not there by accident.
Right.
Yeah, it's not by accident that the openly gay actor from Love, Power, Compassion plays the. He's a composite of different staunchly pro abolitionists.
Right.
And it's definitely there. I mean, I think it can be read as the way forward in order to achieve full equality.
Interesting.
And it's there. If you just take a look, it does. You don't have to dig very deep.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, and it is talking about passing an amendment to the Constitution,
absolutely,
which of course we've been dealing with marriage, with gay marriage for ages and ages. Did you like Life of Pi?
I love Life of Pi. I'm a big Ang Lee fan.
Uh huh.
I think they did a beautiful job opening up this book that many consider unfilmable.
Right. I could not. I read Life of Pi, loved it, had a great time with it. Of course, it's a perfect beach summer reading, and of course, I live on the beach, and I read all year long. And somebody handed it to me, of course, and said, "Read this, you'll love it." And I absolutely fell in love with the book. And then I said, oh, I put it down. I said, that'll never be a movie. And, of course, Ang Lee is the only one that could do that, because I literally have seen every one of his movies, going back to Ride with the Devil and The Ice Storm, and this is just on that level. I put it on that level. I thought it was all right. Django Unchained.
Django's a lot of fun. It's not my favorite Tarantino film,
uh-huh,
but even second tier Tarantino is better than a lot of stuff laying out there. It's so entertaining. He fuses blaxploitation, imagery you would see that recalls Roots.
Right.
And stuff from the 70s with the spaghetti western.
In
the context of the antebellum style.
Right.
All those elements together. He mixes them all up quite cleverly.
It looked like ADD a little bit to me.
Here's my theory on that. Sally Menke is dead. Sally Menke is Quentin Tarantino's longtime editor who passed away.
All right.
This is his first film without her input. And he had a deadline that he was rushing to meet that deadline. He met the deadline, But I have a feeling there was a better film in there that with a little more TLC, a little bit fewer weeks on the editing bay, would have gotten a better Django. But it's still a very good film. I liked it very much.
Do you think having so many more films than five is a good idea or a bad idea?
I'm mixed about that.
Okay.
I think it's allowed films that I really like that just barely missed making the list for Best Picture.
Right.
My example I give you is a movie I loved called An Education, and I believe that was like the first year they opened it up for more than five.
Right.
Beautiful film. It was written. It's based on a memoir by this woman who had carried an affair with an older man while she was growing up in England in the 60s, Nick Hornby, who wrote About a Boy, was the one who adapted the film.
Hornby.
That film would have gotten a nomination if it had been just five nominees.
I see what you mean. Yeah, but it's kind of fun. I like it. I like having a lot like that. First of all, I think it's good business.
Yeah.
I think number one, the Oscars are business. They've showcased Hollywood. They showcase the industry of Hollywood. They help little things like songwriters, designers, costume makers, animators, the documentary. I mean, these things would not get international attention if not for the nomination and that amazing.
So let's talk about the more controversial categories that are really like up in the air in terms of who everyone thinks is going to win.
Let's go to director.
Let's go to director.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's who's going to win? The common wisdom says Spielberg, but I don't know. I mean, David Russell could win. Ang Lee could win.
Yeah. I mean, that would be because Argo, which may or may not win Best Picture,
will win Best Picture.
It will win Best Picture. Ben Affleck, the director, was not nominated for an Oscar. A huge, huge upset and surprise to everyone. That was the first time since when?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, in terms of the nomination process, actors nominate actors, production designers nominate production designers, and directors nominate directors. They take a look at Ben Affleck, and they still see Geely.
Right.
Here's the punk who did Geely. This is only his third film. You know, should we actually give him a nomination? And the answer this year for them was no.
Okay.
But I have a feeling the way that he's been whole humble, and he's just great for the film. There's the other nominees are great movies too.
Right.
It's totally working in his favor. Nominate the snub. That's actually worked in Argo's favor.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Well, I just wondered, but I'm kind of thinking, I think it's going to be Spielberg.
Probably.
Only because, Ang Lee did an amazing job with Life of Pi, but I think it still was a boutique film. I don't think it was ever a big blockbuster. I don't think people.
It made money. It was a very stealth blockbuster.
Right.
It made money quietly.
But it's a boutique.
I mean,
it wasn't. It wasn't the 18-year-olds at the multiplex
in
Peoria.
That wasn't their target audience. Yeah.
Right. No. It wasn't. What about Amour? That's director Michael.
Michael Haneke. I've been following his career for a very long time. He has a reputation for movies that are very cruel.
Uh-huh.
That are very hard to see, hard to watch. He made a film. He actually did not compromise his approach, but he told a story that is very, it's the kind of stuff that melodramas are made of, and he actually went minimalist. So it's a very minimalist take on a very, you've seen it all before in terms of aging.
Right.
This older couple, the husband and wife, they're in their 80s. And you have they're both in music. They're both music teachers.
Right.
And then she suffers a stroke.
Right.
And then he decides to actually take care of her. And it's devastating. It's a very good film. And it is. It's one of his harshest films, and at the same time, his most compassionate.
Right. Right.
I still think the slow pace and the minimalist approach is going to turn off some viewers. The thing is, Haneke is admired enough that I think it's got foreign language film locked.
Right. Well,
I really think it, yeah.
Right, it's up for both. He's up for director for Amour, and he's also for best
If Haneke film. Wins outside of foreign language film, his best bet is probably screenplay, I would say.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Okay, because foreign film has got that locked up. The film that got a lot of buzz, I believe it was No from Chile.
It's the buzz is building now.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It might be a little bit too late in terms of the Academy.
Uh-huh.
But you will be hearing a lot of this film. The Manny Film Festival is having a huge screening at the Guzman
right.
in a few weeks.
Okay.
I look forward to it. It hasn't screened locally yet, so okay. I really look forward to it.
I just read, I'm reading, Seth MacFarlane did a tweet just a little while ago. I'm going to read it out to you. I'm a real one of those nerds. I get all the time. My promise for the Oscars, no cheap wiener jokes, only expensive wiener jokes. I can't wait.
That's right.
It's going to be hilarious.
I wonder if Bruce DeLange is going to be doing some of the jokes like he usually does.
You know what? That
would be a good combination.
I don't know if he's writing this year. I'm going to get on his Twitter account because his Twitter feed is mine. Let's see. What about Amy Adams and The Master?
The Master is a beautiful film. I liked it very much. It turned up a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
I think Joaquin was terrific in it. It's not my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson. I still think The Rule of Blood is still his best
right.
film. But I want to see it again. I really think it's the kind of film that opens up on repeat viewings.
Right.
That's my hunch. I wouldn't rule out Felicity Hoffman. I really think for supporting actress, Anne Hathaway basically has it in the bag.
Okay, but I just I just wanted to talk about it. I love Amy Adams.
Me too.
I'm like the Amy Adams fan on the planet. I don't think Sally Field is going to win for Lincoln.
No.
I think too many people saw The Lines and Wrinkles and went And I really think she was more Norma Rae in it than she.
It fit the role. I think she was very, very good. If I were to vote, I would vote for her.
You would have voted.
Yeah, I would have voted for her.
I would have voted for Anne Hathaway, but maybe Amy Adams. I would always say Amy Adams over everything. Uber.
And if you all of you guys out there who are Amy Adams fans, my favorite movie of hers is actually a movie called Junebug. It was her first Oscar nomination.
Really?
Yeah, it's an indie film.
Junebug.
It's a very small regional comedy. It takes place in I believe North Carolina.
Wow.
And it's about this culture clash between this man who brings his very sophisticated wife to his kind of like set in their way southern family. You know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very good. Very good film, and Amy Adams terrific in that.
Very good, very good. Okay, so when you go to like screenplay, because you've got original screenplays, you've got really some amazing. I don't understand why. Lincoln wasn't nominated for screenplay.
It was. It says it's only for adapted screenplay.
Oh, it's adapted.
Yeah, it's adapted in part from the book Team of Rivals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't even know that.
Thank you
very much. I know Silver Linings Playbook was a book because I read it.
Right.
And I know Argo, of course, was a...
Yeah. If Affleck had been nominated for director, I think it would be tougher to call that category. But I believe since Affleck's not nominated, I think they're kind of going to vote for Chris Terrio for that category. The category is a little harder to call as original screenplay, which could go to Tarantino, it could go to Haneke.
Right. Oh, Tarantino wrote the screenplay, right?
Right.
Go. Right. Yeah. It could go
to Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, Zero Dark Thirty, because you always forget that there is a huge component of Hollywood that likes to blow things up. They love the blow up films. Defy authority and blow something up every 25 minutes.
Yeah, usually those films don't do very well come Oscar time.
Right. But
The Hurt Locker is the exception.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. So, of course, we're going to hear our girl Adele sing Skyfall.
She's got it in the bag.
Oh, my God. That was such a...
Oscar winner Adele has a nice ring to it.
Oscar winner.
And while there are very few critics who didn't care for Skyfall and not getting Hillary for it, I was bored.
Really?
I mean, I know Quantum of Solace wasn't the best Bond film. The second one Craig did, but it didn't put me to sleep the way Skyfall did.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I think Sam Mendes is a very gifted director, but the action is not his thing.
Really?
Yeah, it put me to sleep. I think there's a lot. I mean, Javier Bardem was terrific in it. He comes in an hour, well over an hour into the film.
Right.
He probably has like, 20 minutes of screen time?
Yeah.
Yeah, so once it's gone, the movie's... And it's very disappointing how they handle his character. I found it very disappointing.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Because, do you think that franchise is done?
No, absolutely not. I mean, Skyfall, I'm the exception. Skyfall became a huge hit. There's stuff that Sam Mendes is going to come back direct the next one.
Right.
No, it's not done. Definitely not.
That was 13 or 14, something like that. I can't remember the number. The number was hot. If anybody knows,
I know that Roger Moore was quoted as calling Daniel Craig the best Bond he's ever seen.
I think he is the best Bond he's ever seen. I had to get used to him in the first one.
Right. But I still think that's still his best one. I love Casino Royale.
Yeah, Casino Royale was the best one. Okay, 805-830-8355 was your call-in. No one's calling in, but I heard there was a problem last week with Blog Talk, so we don't know. The Google people are have been hacked a few times.
I'm looking at Seth MacFarlane. He's actually kind of cute, you know?
Yeah, he is.
He's funny and cute. That's a good combination.
Right, and I think they fixed this up. I think this is a beautiful picture, but I think it's been fixed.
Yeah, it's a little airbrushed.
It's a little airbrushed. We want to see. We're looking at all the
tools. Well, we're taunting Seth to see if he'll say, no, that's not airbrushed.
No, I should say that. My mind. Okay, This thing goes live. I have Twitter up, my chat room up, Ruben live, and I have a tendency to stare out the window because I live way up above A1A, which is Ocean Boulevard. Okay, listen, I'm going to do a little commercial right here for the some people here that for tomorrow night. I'm going to be at the Manor watching the Oscars live with a bunch of drinking friends in the big show. And the reason is between awards, I'm also nominated for a bestie. This is Nate Klarfeld.
Ooh.
It's too late to vote for everyone. I'm sure I'm not going to win. But I've been nominated for a bestie for my fundraising efforts here for
All
nonprofit.
Right.
I know, it's kind of weird. I have to tell you that.
Well, let me do my plug. I will be watching the Oscars tomorrow night at the Miami Cinematheque, along with the members of the Cinematheque.
Wow.
You know, it's my favorite art house in Miami. Part of a bunch of our houses are really a lot of fun to attend, like O Cinema, the Tower Theater, the Bill Cosper Cinema, and the Coral Gables Art Cinema. There is an art house in Miami.
Right.
You guys who live in Broward, you come down. The Gateway Cinema is a lot of fun. It's great, but you should come down and see what we got.
Yeah, it's a very passion. Just found out that Michael Feinstein, one of my favorite people on the planet, don't say anything bad about him, he's going to be entertaining at the Governor's Ball after the event tomorrow night. As you know, the Oscars are very early for California folks, so there's a million balls, parties, and events that are scheduled for the evening because they have to get there like at 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So we'll do that. Okay, so what's this? I mean, I am so over red carpets.
Oh, it's old school. You know, it's my catnip for me. You know, it's,
really?
I'm a sucker for the red carpet and the glamour and the glitz.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, okay. The people. I just hate that people say, oh, I'm not watching the Oscars. I am so not watching the Oscars. I'm putting how much I'm not watching the Oscars, and I'm not watching the Oscars so much that I hate the dress that this woman is wearing, but
right.
I'm not watching the Oscars.
Right.
That's what I hate. I hate that double standard.
Right. Well, I'm sure this is how to pose at the Oscars. That there's the Katy Perry, which you know she played. She pretended to be a flapper with a little leg up. If you remember that, that was at the Golden Globes, I think, or the Grammys. It's the Grammys, red carpet. There's the Jessica Rabbit, which of course J Lo is going to pull off again.
We'll see.
And what's her? Angelina Jolie. Did that?
A few years ago. Yeah,
2 years ago.
She pulled it up better than J-Lo, I think.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Right. Then there's the Kiss of Death. We bend over and kiss the crowd.
Oh yeah, that works.
Yeah, we're on the Hollywood Reporter here.
By the way, Hollywood Reporter just ran a great piece on the young actress who played Snow White in that much maligned opening number at the Oscars in the late '80s. I believe it was '89. With Rob Lowe at Prince Charming, you know,
right.
It's one of my guilty pleasures. It's so awful that it's amazing.
Well, you know, you sent that to me this morning, and I went and read it, and I thought it was hilarious. I do remember that. I remember it lasted forever.
Yeah,
Rob Lowe
minutes.
Cannot sing at all. Period.
Well, he thinks better than Russell Crowe in Les Miserables.
Okay, all right. Okay, forget it.
Yeah,
that's true. But, and it was, and this kind of like almost ruined her career, right?
It did. She does dinner theater now in San Diego, I believe.
Right,
yeah.
And I guess people were like backstabbing, and there was this, who was the odd producer in the caftan with the debauchery?
Carr. I've been seeing his last name is Carr.
I'm looking for it right
Alan
now.
Carr, maybe?
Alan Carr.
Yeah.
That's right. And there was all this, you know, people knew that it was a bomb. I mean, they were just going. They were just going crazy. And that wonderful thing when she ran into Glenn Close.
Yeah.
And thought that was the thing. Okay.
Poor thing. But it could not be an LGBT theme Oscar show without us mentioning that Barbara Streisand will perform at the Oscars.
That's
one reason for me to watch.
Oh, of course, I'll
have
to go watch anyway. And I think the cast of Les Miserables is going to perform.
Oh goodness, don't say that.
No, they are.
No.
I think I did hear.
Russell Crowe will probably stay out. Hopefully.
No,
please.
I could be wrong, but I'm almost.
Oh goodness
I'm
gracious.
Almost sure. I'm almost sure.
Can you believe that movie's going to win sound?
No,
because they actually
no.
Recorded the performances live.
Right, I knew that.
It's the front runner for sound, the sound mix.
Because they did it live.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh goodness.
Well,
probably deserves that better than I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not a fan. I mean that. I love musicals, I really do, but from the beginning of that film, something was off.
You know,
it looked like these people were ashamed to be singing.
Well, you know, it looks like they were nervous. It looked more like it was like you were filming a high school production. That was the first thing I said. I'm a
and it looked so ugly. The way dirty. It's like I was
dirty.
Quiet at that.
Dirty.
What was the it looked like that he looked he was using this lens.
Yeah,
this wide angle lens all through the movie. It looked terrible.
Yeah,
terrible.
It looked bad. Well, I just want to give you a little Les Miserables trivia. I, as many of you know, I'm a retired dentist, and in my last, I was a dentist for 25 years, and I got bored my last 10 years. Surprise, surprise. And I took a class in theatrical dentistry design, a three and a half week course sponsored by New York University. And it was during the post-American run of Les Miserables. And one of our, we had five different Broadway shows that we would go and help with the team. Many Broadway shows have a team of dentists that work on the makeup for the prostheses and the little cap overhang so that things look really bad. So I was assigned to Les Miserables for an afternoon. You spend all afternoon, it's 6 hours to get the people in makeup. The dental makeup studio, if anybody has ever seen the play, is inside the barricade. So I spent like 7.5 hours being spun around because that thing spins around. And another thing people don't realize is they also change clothes in the barricade. The barricade is a high-tech marvel of little doors and things, but the little places to go. And the actors, I don't know if you realize this, many of you probably did because you're better at Broadway than I am, is that some of the Revolutionary Guards and the peasants were the same people. That they went in, they changed clothes, and they came out the other side. While I was being spun around, they would do like a 30-second change with makeup. So he would have to slip their prosthesis.
It's very relevant because, as some of you may know, Les Mis is coming back to Broadway.
Yes, it is.
It was announced this week.
Right, and that's why your tickets are so expensive. That there's only like, I think, five of those real barricades. So if you see people coming in and out of the barricades and they look really big, then you're seeing one of the expensive shows, and that's a big
so
deal.
Animated. Let's before we want to go to animated really, really quickly.
Believe it or not, we only have 2 minutes left.
I know. I say Brave will probably win. It's not my top choice. I was actually a little disappointed. I'm rooting for Brave had a very troubled production history. Brenda Chapman was actually directing the film. She was actually replaced halfway through in production.
Really. Okay.
It's very schizoid in the tone of the film. So yeah, I believe that it's beautiful animation. It's going to win over the Academy. I'm rooting for Wreck-It Ralph, but that guy's full of 80s arcade game references that will go sailing over the older voters' heads. Unfortunately, I'm rooting for it. I'm not so sure. I think it might be Brave, but I'm rooting for Wreck-It Ralph.
Okay, Wreck-It Ralph. But what about Frankenweenie?
I was disappointed as well. It's based on a wonderful short that. Tim Burton did in the 80s for Disney. I love the short. I felt the film fell flat.
Okay,
for me.
I saw the Tim Burton version. I guess it was 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, my God. Okay, so we got, score, documentary short. I can't believe we have 90 seconds. Okay,
goodness.
So, I know.
We could actually be speaking for the Oscar for 2 hours.
We should
really.
Be doing
this.
No, okay, well, next year we'll do an hour show.
Absolutely.
Okay. Who's best actress? We never went to that.
Well, there's a three-way race going on. It used to be Jessica Chastain was the front runner. Then Harvey Weinstein happened. All of a sudden, it was Jennifer Lawrence was the front runner.
Uh-huh.
But now Emmanuel Riva from Amour, the oldest Academy Award nominee in that category, it's got the momentum. So who knows?
Okay. Best actor.
Best actor is Daniel Day-Lewis all the way.
All the way.
Yeah,
all the way.
Absolutely.
I can't. If Jackman gets it, I'm going to shit.
He is not going to win.
He was not good. I was really surprised.
He was decent.
Best supporting.
Supporting actor is a big race. Tommy Lee Jones and De Niro. I think one of those two is going to get it. If you ask me today, I'll say De Niro today. I might say Tommy Lee Jones tomorrow.
I'm saying De Niro.
Yeah?
I
see it happening.
Okay. I see. Oh, supporting actors, we already talked about.
And
Hathaway, not a hands down, damn. Okay. You know, I think we got it here. All done. So what do you say? We got 25 seconds. Best place to see it. Okay, I'm going to be at the Manor. You're going to be in Miami at what?
Miami Cinematheque.
Miami Cinematheque. Well, give me the address.
Oh, it's actually for members of the Cinematheque, but do go see movies there. It's Washington on South Beach on the ground floor of the historic City Hall across from Twist and the 11th Street Diner.
Okay, listen, it has been a pleasure. Good luck tomorrow night, and we'll see you at the Oscars.
Yay. Thanks.